Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Frost before 8 a.m., otherwise sunny tomorrow, the high in the mid-70s.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's game with words and popular culture, which occasionally glimpses into the lives of the rich and famous.
Condi Rice lived there.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Well, I'm bet she's glad you just told 1.5 million people.
Apartment 806, drop by.
Yeah, here you go.
Richard, how much of this will be on the air?
Not much, I guarantee you. We dare to question the conventional, delve into controversial issues like Scandinavian ichthyology.
The sardines swimming in... They don't know it's Finland.
Throw us
off. They can cross over into, you know, Norway or Denmark, and then they suddenly become Danish sardines, or... I mean, let me see your papers.
Yes.
You paid good money for the brilliance. See what else can happen.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Despite fears of a humanitarian crisis developing in Muammar Gaddafi's hometown of Sirte, his spokesman, Musa Ibrahim, is apparently vowing to fight to the death. It's not clear if the man speaking to the Syrian-based television station Al Rai was really Ibrahim, but in any case, he denied that he had been captured and said that he was still in Sirte, which is besieged by revolutionary forces. It's one of the last Libyan cities still in the hands of Gaddafi loyalists. Deteriorating conditions there have forced many to flee. The International Committee of the Red Cross describes the situation in Sirte as dire. A spokesman says staff at the main hospital told the organization that people were dying because of a lack of oxygen and fuel for the hospital's generators. The BBC's Jonathan Head has more.
A 4-person Red Cross team was able to pass through the front lines in Sirte and bring in a small amount of medical aid for the wounded trapped inside the city. They were unable to reach the main hospital, but doctors there told them it had no water and power to treat around 200 injured. Forces loyal to the new transitional government now surround Sirte, but they're facing strong resistance from Gaddafi loyalists. There was talk on Friday of a ceasefire to allow thousands of civilians to leave the city, but so far that has not happened.
The BBC's Jonathan Head. Syrian authorities say they have restored law and order to a rebellious town in the central part of the country. According to the state-run news agency, authorities claim to have hunted down armed terrorists in Rostan after 5 days of intense fighting. Meanwhile, Syrian opposition groups have formally announced the creation of a council designed to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad's regime. They unveiled it after a meeting in Turkey today. Today's protests in the Afghan capital of Kabul underscores heightened tensions between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The protest comes as Afghan officials blame Pakistan's powerful spy agency and the Taliban of plotting to kill the country's former president. Earlier this weekend, Afghan President Hamid Karzai said there is no longer any sense in negotiating with the Taliban. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports that the apparent reversal comes after Karzai pushed peace talks for years.
Karzai said that after an assassin posing as a Taliban envoy killed the head of Afghanistan's High Peace Council on September 20th, there is no longer anyone on the Taliban side to talk with. The Taliban have not accepted responsibility for the murder, but Afghan authorities say they have evidence the attack was planned near Quetta, Pakistan, where the Taliban leadership is believed to have a headquarters. Karzai had for years promoted reconciliation with the Taliban, whom he often referred to as his brothers. U.S. officials agree that the conflict here must end through negotiation. But Karzai said that the real negotiations must be conducted with Pakistan, underscoring the belief that Islamabad has promoted violence in Afghanistan in order to ensure that Pakistan will have a decisive role in shaping the conclusion of the war. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Kabul.
You're listening to NPR News. A month-long manhunt in the redwood forests of Northern California is over. Authorities say a man suspected of killing a Fort Bragg city councilman in late August and a county land trust officer was fatally shot by officers himself involved in a massive manhunt, the region's largest manhunt in decades. Mendocino County Sheriff Thomas Allman says he wishes the manhunt for 35-year-old Aaron Basler could have ended differently, but he says Basler was a dangerous man.
The fact that two homicides occurred, the fact that he fired upon three Alameda SWAT officers initially clearly led us to believe that any contact from law enforcement is going to be met with deadly and lethal resistance.
Solomon says officers found Basler with the help of a bloodhound that picked up a scent after a burglary Friday at a nearby truck shop. The British Conservative Party conference kicks off today in Manchester, England. Larry Miller reports that Prime Minister David Cameron and his cabinet will tell the party faithful that Britain needs to stick to its austerity program.
Cameron knows the austerity message alone won't be enough to convince fellow conservatives his government has Britain's economic problems under control. The message will need to focus on boosting growth. Jobs and affordable housing for the young are also big issues. Cameron told the BBC his government plans to build 200,000 affordable homes, which will create 400,000 new jobs.
The average age of a first-time buyer without help from mum and dad is now 37. We've got to get the homes built that we need for young people.
Cameron's plans include giving developers land on which to build low-cost homes and to sell people living in public housing their properties at a cut price and using that money to build new homes. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Fort Townsend, Washington comes from the Bishop Hotel, Victorian elegance in Fort Townsend's historic waterfront community. On the web at bishopvictorian.com. And Sirens, pub atmosphere, food, and high spirits on Fort Townsend Bay. On the web at sirenspub.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. From Chimacum High School on the Olympic Peninsula near Port Townsend, Washington, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a regular Olympic Peninsula kind of guy, always a little gray with a sprinkling of white up top, Nat Sigaloff. She's ridden ferries, crossed bridges, and rushed to get here so she could slow down and be cut off from the hubbub, Francine Akbar. And he's intrigued that it stays light so late, but worried that now he has to stay up late to stay up late, but then it'll get earlier early. Such are the travails of Mr. Barry Nolan. And who leads on this occasion?
That singular Olympian Nat.
I'll be playing the part of the captain this evening.
Nat will be the captain. To my left, team two, author, librettist, man of arts and letters, Murray Horowitz. A round of applause. Columnist, critic, she of the well-chosen word, Carolyn Fay Fox. And educator, broadcaster, force of nature, Miss Garland Waller. And who captains?
The woman with the right words.
I will be the captain.
Carolyn will captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. To begin, Bob and Sarah Chivaco of New Woodstock, New York, with a little help from Seattle's own Don Ellman, have contributed a round of What's the Difference? Carolyn?
Yes.
What's the difference between insubstantial and unsubstantial?
The difference between insubstantial and unsubstantial. One of them, let's see.
It's a tough one.
Insubstantial is something that does not have much substance, as in an insubstantial meal.
Yes, that is true.
Unsubstantial is something that is not of substance at all.
Insubstantial has to do with matter, and unsubstantial has to do with ideas or arguments or things like that.
Well, it has everything to do with... Oh, boy, that was pretty good, Murray. It has everything to do with argument, yes.
It means it's not supported?
That is exactly right. Ooh. Very good. 10 points.
See?
Oh, like unsubstantial.
Now, no, man, now I know why my wife has always described herself as unsubstantial. And yeah. What? You haven't seen my bank balance. You don't know, man.
Insubstantial does mean lacking substance, as a world of dreams, an insubstantial world of dreams, or amount, as an insubstantial amount. Unsubstantial means having no foundation in fact, or without material substance. So that's things in court are unsubstantiated.
Substantial.
Yes.
Try this one, Nat, and I really like this. What's the difference between imbue and instill?
Let's see, they both mean to fill somebody with something. Imbue somebody, it means to invest, to fill, enrich him or her with a particular attribute or characteristic. Instill is to place something specifically, such as to instill fear or to instill momentary stupidity, which I can vouch for at the moment.
You're a long way there. That's not exactly it. Do you have any help coming from
instill implies more doctrinaire.
Yes, it does.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
Imbue implies more neutrality.
Any help from the other side?
You instill something in somebody, and you imbue somebody with something.
You know,
so imbue is an intransitive verb. And instill is a transitive verb.
Ooh. Sounds good to me.
What would be the difference between an imbuer and an instiller?
Well,
$50.
Yeah.
I tell you what, back home in my holler in Kentucky, an instiller could get you in a lot of trouble. I tell you.
Let me just say what we got here. To imbue is to inspire, as with feelings, to imbue or opinions. To instill is to introduce by gradual, persistent effort. It takes time to instill something. To imbue someone, you can inspire them right on the moment. Now, that's what we got, and certainly, you know, when you get home, take your time, compose a letter. Murray, what's the difference between brusque and brash?
Oh, brusque has, here again, we're in a temporal mode, I think. Brusque connotes, gesund. That was a rather brusque sneeze, I think. It's rather brash of me to say gesund instead of God bless you. But it has to do with... It has to do with time. Brusque means rather quickly, or somebody's brusque, they're dismissive, right? Whereas
yes.
Brash has to do with bravado or loudness or boastfulness and all that.
You know something? 10 points. Yeah. Nice job. I think the key word is abrupt. As you said, brusque is abrupt in manner, blunt or rough. Brash is simply impertinent.
So we got 10 points for that, right?
You did.
Good. Did we?
Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between restrict and restrain?
Restrict is to limit someone's ability to do something. Restrain is to restrict, is to prohibit them from doing something.
Restrict is to limit the scope. Restrain is to limit the action.
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points. That's
very good.
It's not exactly true, but it's so close. It's really very close. Anyone want to clarify on the other side?
Yeah. Restrict means to place limits on,
yes,
in whatever way.
That's
and
the key.
Restrain means to hold back or to tie down.
Boy, it would have been a great 10 points for you. That's
thank
almost
you.
Word for word. To restrict is to confine or keep within limits. To restrain is to hold back from action. And that's why you got the 10 points, because of the action. Try this one, Garland. What's the difference between a caveat and a disclaimer?
Between a caveat and a disclaimer?
Yes.
One's in Latin.
You know, you paid good money for the brilliance, and look what happened.
Well, a caveat is...
It's a warning. It's let the buyer beware.
Okay.
It's short for caveat emptor, or caveat emptor.
Oh, that's right. And then the disclaimer is, it's a warning, right?
Well, no.
A disclaimer is, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, disclaimer is that...
it's actually true.
Right.
So beware.
Yeah, the caveat is a warning to beware, to let the buyer beware, and disclaimer is an abdication of responsibility.
What he said.
That is exactly right. Yeah.
Cause needless to say, I use that one all the time.
I think we have found Murray's category. That's A caveat is a warning. That's what it is. Just a simple warning. Although in legal terms, it can be an active notice. It's basically just a warning. A disclaimer disclaims responsibility. And finally, Barry, what's the difference between an allotment and an allocation?
He Ooh. Works in Congress, for God's sake. You
That's
know
exactly what I gave it to him.
An allotment is a quantity that is has been distributed or will be distributed to you.
Yeah.
And an allocation is the indication that this much may go to you.
You know, it sounded confusing, didn't it?
No.
But it's exactly right.
Right. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Can you, for the more confused in the audience, can you clarify that just a bit?
He works in Congress.
Yeah, what am I saying?
Is that a That's not my job, man.
That's right. What am I saying? An allotment, as you said, is a portion or a share parceled out, distributed, or apportioned. An allocation is the share or portion designated to a particular purpose. It did really well on that round. And let's move on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends Hot Club Sandwich. It is the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Nat's team. 10 points up for grabs to Nat if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word... Don. D-H-A-N. Don. Gentlemen?
Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see a man, but ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Tied and tied, waiting for no man, but ain't got time to shake your hand. Standing on the corner, all full of jive, and I know that you're my boy, cause I always give you five. Dollar to buy. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see a man, but ain't got time to shake your hand.
What do you figure the weather's like first week in January in Charlotte, North Carolina? Because that's when Says You heads to the middle of Mecklenburg for Charlotte Rambling. Live performances, Says You. Tickets, information, and details are available at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, good things are just bound to happen. So remember, if you live near a family of Tar Heels and your sister loves Says You, you gotta ask yourself, is it too early to start thinking Christmas? Says You returns after this from home.
I'm Marco Werman. The Himalayan nation of Bhutan pioneered what's known as the Happiness Index. A Canadian scientist wants to see if Western governments can learn how to make people happier here.
We have a bit more discomfort with the idea of happiness as a government policy issue. If you use that phrase over here, they'd probably wonder what you'd been smoking.
The Happiness Index, next time on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
I'm Krista Tippett. Wangari Maathai, the first African woman to win a Nobel Peace Prize, died this week. She shed light on the connections between trees and soil, war and peace, and the human body and spirit. Next time on Being, we revisit a beautiful conversation I had with her in 2006. Please join me. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
You're listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 20 minutes after 9, 51 degrees in Nashville.
To Seattle and Port Townsend, Washington, November 11th, 12th, and 13th. Tickets are going fast for Missed Opportunities, pithy Puget performances of Says You. On November 11th and 12th, we invade Town Hall for two shows. Then on November 13th, it's a community Says You in Port Townsend. Tickets, information, and details available, of course, at SaysYou.net. SaysYou. Remember, that's November 11th and 12th in Seattle's Town Hall, and November 13th, a community Says You in Port Townsend. See you on the sound for Says You.
Going downtown to see a man, but I ain't got time to shake your hand. I ain't got time to shake your hand. I ain't got time to shake your hand. I'm going to put it in my pocket till I get back. Hit that jive, Jack.
Yeah.
That is Hot Club Sandwich. Thank Tim Wetmiller, Kevin Stevens, Ray Wood, Joe Muscarello, Matt Cercely, and Greg Ruby. Thanks, guys. This also gives us a chance to thank our scorekeepers for this game. Nathan Hodson, his sister Victoria, and of course Ben Schur. Thanks for keeping the score, you guys. We have had a few moments with the word Don. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Don, I think this is a word from India. It refers to cattle that are not privately owned but are the collective property of a village.
Moo.
Was that a mooing sound I heard out there? I don't know. Collective cattle is what you're saying this
yes.
is? Okay.
That's a lot better than the real definition it's here.
Yes, I would imagine. Collective cattle could be the Don. That could be it. Marie, it could be something else.
Well, Don is actually an old radio term. It's been used throughout the history of radio. First, there was Don McNeil's Breakfast Club.
I remember it well.
There's NPR White House reporter Don Gagne.
Yes, I remember.
And, of course, the Morning Edition staff, which is known as the Don Patrol. However, it's all right. It stops there, okay? But actually, I should know that because there was a crossword puzzle I did the other day that had, I can't remember the word, but it was for a European duck. This is an Asian duck. A Don is an Asian duck.
An Asian duck is a Don. Is there Don down is what I'd like to know.
Don down? Is there Don?
If no, a Don is...
But there's a Don Doobie Doo Don down.
I would imagine.
I think what the audience is waiting for is Quiet Flows the Don.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it could be the Asian duck. Or it might be something else. Garland, what say you?
Well, it's a swear, as we say.
A swear?
Yeah, in the South. Don, it's hot in here. Yeah. No, it's a type of breath or breathing in yoga or Eastern meditation.
Yogotic breathing.
We just heard one. Yeah. All together.
First there was mooing, then there was breathing, then there's this. Thank you. So Don is either yogotic breathing.
Yogotic?
Well, why not?
Yogotic?
You got it.
Yogotic.
Yogoid? I don't know.
Yogic.
Yogic?
Yogic.
Yogic.
Yogic. Yeah. Yogic.
Okay, it's either yogic breathing.
Yogic.
An Asian duck. Or the collective cattle in a village. It is one of those three, and the choice, Nat, unfortunately, is yours.
Well, I think you're all wrong.
What is it?
At first, I thought it was that late, great comic Don DeLuise.
Don DeLuise,
yes,
that's right.
Yes, yes. Let me give you a little hypothesis here. In my town, there is a Don Yoga Center, but it's spelled D-A-H-N.
So maybe that's breathing in.
So I think that the breathing, that might be Garland's attempt to derail us.
In my town, there's a duck yoga center, okay?
And in my town, the cows do it.
So I'm just saying.
We're overlooking Carolyn's collective kettle.
Well, that I think that she was trying to get us to go down an Indian route.
Which Garland pretty much wrapped up. And
so what do you think about this Asian quacker?
Are we making progress here?
I don't think so.
I am.
My hypothesis is the duck.
We are taking different paths, but... So you really want to buy a duck?
I'll go with Francine's duck.
I could be wrong, of course.
I'll go for the duck as well. Our collective opinion is duck.
Murray, as incredible as it may seem, they think a Don, D-H-A-N, is an Asian duck. Is that in fact what it is?
Quack, quack, quack. Please fake a definition.
Okay.
10 points for Carolyn's team. All right, audience, you got a 50-50 shot.
Cows.
I think it's an undeniable groundswell for the cattle, Carolyn. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Don, the village cattle.
Is what it is.
Win together, lose alone.
Let's go on to round three. This area is such an agrarian resource that it inspired Phil Salkin to finish a category he's been working on for months titled, How Does Your Garden Grow? 10 points if you can accurately answer the following inquiries about fruits and vegetables. Carolyn, what is the origin of the phrase cool as a cucumber?
The origin of the phrase cool as a cucumber. Well, a cucumber is cool. It tends to be cooler on the inside than the ambient temperature outside the cucumber.
By almost 20 degrees, that's true.
Yes.
And that is part of it. Do you know where else this might come from?
A garden.
Yeah.
Would that be Shakespeare again?
Oh, what a great guess. No, it is not Shakespeare.
Okay. But teammates.
Unflustered. Is it a stage thing? Is it a theater? You know.
Any help from the other side? Do you know where this might come from?
Compresses that you put on your eyes.
Yes, that's when I've used it. I've put my hand on my son's head when he was feeling, you know, ill, and said, "No, you're cool as a cucumber." And the
Well, your son's head is shaped funny.
I mean,
<laughs>
For the listening audience, Murray has just agreed to buy Ben a train set for Christmas.
It is true. Anybody want to take a shot at this?
Does it come from, Francine was suggesting that it was used as a cool compress when people felt badly.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. This goes back to the mid-1600s. It was thought that lying on a bed of cucumbers or applying cucumbers to the face would actually lower a fever, and for all we know, it did.
Wait, a bed of cucumbers?
Yes. They're laying people on a bed of cucumbers.
It is a common beauty application to take swelling away from your puffy eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Nat, I love this. If ever there was a garden question, this is it. What do Homer Simpson and the slugs in one's garden have in common?
Oh.
They like donuts. And the slugs in one's garden have in common, they're not big on salt.
They're not big on salt, that's true. But
they don't have
there
shells.
There is something they like.
We've got
Homer's,
it over here.
Homer Simpson likes residuals.
Yes, he does. Yes, he
and
does.
And when a slug moves along the street, you have a...
You're going to love this one when you hear it.
Okay.
What do they both love, Homer Simpson and slugs?
Beer.
That's exactly right.
Beer. Slugs.
Beer. You know what?
I want to applaud you, Richard, for coming up with all these Port Townsend-based questions.
I'm still trying to get by with this slugs for you.
Oh, I think that got the response it deserved, don't you? All right.
Wow.
Try this one, Murray. 66 feet, 11 inches is the current world record for this feat du folie. What might this be?
Oh, feet. It's not a zucchini, is it?
No.
It's the world's longest bed of cucumbers. No. But it is, it's a world record. That's what it is.
It is a world record. It is 66 feet, 11 inches.
Is it the world's tallest tomato vine?
No.
No, it's not.
I will say that the record is held by Jack Dietz of Chicago, Illinois.
Oh.
March 1989. Dates all the way back to then.
66 feet.
Okay.
Feet de fruit.
Oh, somebody throwing a fruit?
Ah, that's it.
Not throwing, no.
Oh, pumpkin chucking?
No, that's throwing. Kicking a fruit. Is it kicking a pumpkin or...
I think Benjamin...
Spitting watermelon seeds.
That is exactly right.
Oh, my God. Oh,
66 feet, 11 inches.
Damn.
Oh.
Benjamin and I went out in the back during the intermission. I spit a cherry pit 15 feet. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I almost died.
Well, you're supposed to take it out of the cherry first.
That's what happened. This guy spits a watermelon seed 66 feet.
But that's because he was a practitioner of Don Yoga.
I imagine. 66 feet, 11 inches is the current world record for watermelon seed spitting. And I think Jack Dietz of Chicago needs to be recognized. Good job. What do you want to bet I get about 27 emails next week saying, that record's no longer standing? All right, try this one, Francine. If a plant is a wart, W-O-R-T, mm-hmm. What is it supposed to do? If a plant is a wart, what's it supposed to do?
Grow at night.
No, what a great guess. That's not right.
It grows on something.
Does it grow on rocks?
No.
Incorrect?
No.
But a great guess.
I think we've got it over here, Richard.
You do?
Yeah.
Hang on one second.
After all, says you is a simple game with
is
warts.
Is a wart in your garden something you actually a human would consume?
In a way, yes. In a way.
Oh, it's an herb.
Which means?
It is steeped or sold at an enormous expense.
yes. For no particular reason.
It is. It means it's something that's sold in capsules on television.
You know what? Tell them on the other side.
It's used for medicinal purposes.
That's exactly right. It is used for a medicinal purpose. What do I give him? 4 points?
Five.
5 points. Give them 5 points for that. That sounds good. try this one, Garland. Why are asparagus and rhubarb differ from the rest of all other vegetables? Asparagus and rhubarb differ in one way from all other vegetables.
I won't say what I'm thinking.
Well, how do they differ?
You know, it's interesting because the other side does know this.
But celery's.
Yeah, celery's like that too. It's true.
They're both stalks.
Well, they are, but that's not the real difference here. There's a distinct.
Oh, I know. Your mother makes you eat them.
No.
Strangely enough, that's not it.
No.
They grow wild.
Well, it's about how they grow, certainly.
They grow up, and other vegetables grow down.
Evidently, you've seen my tomatoes. I'm going to give them how many points for the struggle?
None. It's an unproductive struggle.
Now, give them 3 points for the struggle. I'm going to go to the other side. What do you think, other side?
It takes 7 years for the first plant to bear.
Well, audience, give them a hand.
Well, they're perennial.
Asparagus and rhubarb are the only vegetables that can reproduce on their own for several growing seasons.
Wow.
All other vegetables must be replanted every year. So that's,
what about Day of the Triffids? Didn't you ever see that?
I think my 7 years is
right. I sense unrest.
I think asparagus can be seen.
No.
Is there disagreement out there?
Yes.
Artichokes. Oh, if you'd said that, we would have gotten it.
What do you think? I give them, well, you got your 3 points, and we'll just let it go on and take the mail as it comes in the door.
Boy. You should crowdsource all your questions.
Yeah. And, Barry, I'm going to give you a lot of help with this. I'll give you points for almost anything. It's just I really loved finding out about this. A tomato is a fruit, but it is legally known as a vegetable. Why?
I know this one.
A tomato is a fruit, but it's legally known as a vegetable?
Legally, yes.
There's a two-word answer for that?
Yes.
Alan Dershowitz.
He's exactly right.
He won a lawsuit.
Yes. Do you know anything about this?
Heinz v. Dole?
Ten points for that answer. Absolutely nothing whatsoever to do about this. Why would there have been a legal case about whether or not a tomato is a fruit or a vegetable?
Because there were tariffs on one and not on the other.
That's exactly right. I'm glad I gave him the 10 points. That is exactly right. In 1893, a case went before the U.S. Supreme Court about importing tomatoes from the West Indies. Fruits could be imported tax-free. Vegetables couldn't. Since tomatoes were eaten with main dishes and not as desserts, the court ruled them to be a vegetable. So, yes, we know a tomato is a fruit, but not legally. I think that was great. Let's go on to round four, which is Nat's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word flirred. F-L-I-R-D. Flirred. Gentlemen? Now, I'm sure you remember that Sisu's coming to Charlotte, North Carolina this January, and that tickets are selling like reduced-fat pumpkin cream cheese muffins for November in Seattle and Port Townsend, Washington. And you know how to find the tickets. They're at sisu.net. S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. So whether you're perched on Puget Sound in mid-November or sitting in Charlotte, North Carolina the first weekend in January, Sisu is coming your way. Briefly, Sisu pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi, the host of Q. Tune into Q each day for your dose of arts, culture, and entertainment, from live music and feature chats with compelling cultural figures to debates on the issues of the day. Q has got you covered. That's coming up from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock.
This week on This American Life.
Should we refrain or not from hitting them with the light first, or wait till they do it?
We're going to refrain till they hit us, and then we're going to knock the hell out of them with it.
The Minutemen are guys who set out each night for the U.S. border to stop illegal immigrants. Though they seem to spend most of their time in this cat-and-mouse game with protesters. Basically,
the party's just getting ready to start.
Shining flashlights at each other.
Okay, turn it on. Crank it on.
Saturday afternoons at 1 and Sunday evenings at 6.
Support for Says You on WPLN, made possible in part by community support. Many companies will match gifts to Nashville Public Radio made by employees and retirees. Ask your employer if they have a matching gift program, or find out more in the membership section of our website, nashvillepublicradio.org. The time is 9:41. It's 53 degrees in Nashville.
Support for Says You in Port Townsend, Washington comes from The Bishop Hotel, Victorian elegance in Port Townsend's historic waterfront community, on the web at bishopvictorian.com. And Sirens, pub atmosphere, food, and high spirits on Port Townsend Bay, on the web at sirenspub.com. Club sandwich, ladies and gentlemen.
In 5-4.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much for giving us a little time with the word flirt. We will go first to Nat Segaloff.
At first, I thought flirt was a Steve Allen word, like gibble or hern or something like that. Then it sounded like a Muppet word.
Yes.
The flirt is okie dokie. But in fact, a flirt, if you ever read comic books, is like a jarn. A jarn is that collection of punctuation marks that signify swearing. A flirt is when you want to signify an emotion inside, like blush or chagrin or hiccup, or some emotion. It's put in parentheses in the course of a sentence so that the character's dialogue can be made more emotional. So a flirt is a parenthetical expression of an emotion in comic books.
A parenthetical phrase which shows emotion in comic books is a flirt.
A flirt.
That's gee, I hope it's that. I really do. I like that one. But it could be something else. Francine, what say you?
A flirt is a type of fish. It is, in fact, a Finnish sardine.
A Finnish sardine?
I've never finished my sardines. I just can't. Maybe the grape jelly.
How'd you do today, dear? Came back with a boatload of flurd.
From the fjord.
From the fjord.
Flurd from the fjord.
Fjord flurd.
Open a can of flurd.
All right. Well, it could be the finished sardine. That's possible. Or, Barry, yet a third alternative. Ah.
A flurd is an object that is flimsy or gauzy or unsubstantial. To use it correctly in a sentence, I asked the Fox News anchor for a fact-based answer, and he just gave me the flurd. Good luck with editing that.
Yeah. Boy, the Fox numbers must be big out here, I'll tell you that. Flimsy.
Flimsy.
An object which is unsubstantial and flimsy is a flurd. Either that, well, wait a minute, a finished sardine is kind of flimsy and insubstantial, don't you? Or it could be that parenthetical phrase in comic books which displays emotion. It's one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, falls to you.
Well, I'm remembering another word we had, grolix, which means the expression of, you know, vulgar language. So I don't know if there could be an expression of emotion in comic books called flurd, if that would have a special name.
Thank you. Can't believe you remembered grolix. That's great. That was a good one.
It was a good word.
I think that you were right on it, Carolyn. I think that flurd is too close to fjord and sounds... You know, Finnish, fjord, and feud, and fjord, and fjord, and fjord, you've heard of it.
Yeah, but I don't think Barry would use the word flimsy. I don't think that's it.
Oh, so you mean, so he read it off the card, flimsy?
No, I think he's making stuff up.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
When have you ever known your husband not to tell the truth?
Barry always tells the truth.
Well?
Good man. Good man.
All right.
I liked the fish.
You liked the fish?
Yeah, because Francine didn't elaborate. It's very Finnish. It's very, you know, Swedish.
The sardines swimming in... They don't know it's Finland.
That was the gross off.
They could cross over into, you know, Norway or Denmark, and then they suddenly become Danish sardines? Or, I mean... No, man. Finnish sardines.
Yeah, I maybe don't know what I'm talking about.
All right, then where does this leave
us? Let me see your papers. You know.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Barry? What do you think it is?
I rather liked Barry's flimsy.
Oh, okay.
But you're the captain.
I kind of like gnats.
Ooh.
So you're for the fish, Garland.
No, I really am not that committed.
Okay, and Murray, you're for...
I'm for the insubstantial object. But as your mother said, use your best judgment.
There is no best judgment here. But I will go with Murray because I don't want to go down alone in defeat.
We go down together,
baby. We'll go with Barry.
Barry, they have come to the conclusion that a flurd is unsubstantial object. Is that in fact what it is?
A flurd is an object that is flimsy, gaudy, and unsubstantial.
That's what it is. Ten points. Says You has many people to thank this week, including Michelle Sandoval of Windmere Real Estate for supporting Says You in Port Townsend and for supporting The Boiler Room, a youth-run coffee house and all-age music venue in Port Townsend. On the web at ptbr.org. And we could not have come were it not for the help and industry of the fabulous Leela Hilton and her organization, the Clemente Course in the Humanities, an educational institution to teach the humanities at the college level to people living in economic distress. On the web at clementecourse.org. That's C-L-E-M-E-N-T-E course, all one word, .org. And finally, to all the good folks of Port Townsend who treated us to cruises on the Sound, fed us gourmet meals, and met us with smiles wherever we went. Thanks from all of us at Says You. And if your community group, theater, or organization would like to host a live performance of Says You, come on over to the website and let us know. We'll be there before you can say sesquipedalia. Let's go on to round five. Let's close tonight with a return bout with a category that I personally love called Here's Looking Up Your Address. For 10 points, who or what might I find if I go to the following address? Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
5 Avenue Anatole France.
I'm sorry, 5 Avenue...
Anatole France.
Anatole France, oh.
It's in Paris.
Thank you, Murray.
the
you will find cheese.
Undoubtedly,
loo?
But...
It could be, no, I don't think it could be the
you'll
Eiffel
find, Tower. You'll find...
Is it the Eiffel Tower?
It is, in fact, the Eiffel Tower. 5 Avenue Anatole France. Nat.
You know, sometimes you can go right by it. You know, you just...
Yeah, you don't just... You never... You just...
You go right and miss it 100 times.
try this one, Nat. What might I find at Virginia and New Hampshire at F?
Oh, gosh. It's Washington, D.C.
Who or what might I find...
Washington, D.C.
At Virginia and New Hampshire at F?
Is that Union Station?
It is not.
No.
Is it near Union Station?
F Street.
Well, it's closer than the Eiffel Tower, but that's...
Virginia and New Hampshire,
like
that
the bus station or something.
Virginia and New Hampshire.
Well, give us the obvious.
Is it one of the major government buildings, or is it like...
It is not.
Girls or something.
It is.
Oh, is that Washington Monument?
No, it's more down toward Rock Creek.
Foggy Bottom, yes. George Washington University area.
Well, further up the river, down the river, actually.
Blair House or something?
You're right, no. It's in Washington, D.C. You're right, it's in Foggy Bottom. Is it
a residence?
Well, yeah, it is.
The vice president's?
No, it's not that kind of residence. A lot of people lived there. Well, lived there.
Lived
Watergate
there.
Is the wrong...
I'm sorry?
No.
Is it the Watergate?
It is, no. In fact,
the Watergate
was. Yes,
Watergate.
Exactly.
It's not
it
there
still
anymore?
Is.
Well, it's Watergate. There, but it's...
The Watergate apartment building.
Oh. No,
yes.
That's where it is.
Yes. Okay.
It is at Virginia and New Hampshire.
It was just sold, actually.
Murray.
Yes.
What might I find at the following address? The A344, just west of Amesbury.
This is in Britain.
The A344, just west of Amesbury. About 2 miles, actually.
Oh, I'll guess Stonehenge.
Good guess. Ten points.
Oh, my God.
That was, in fact, a good guess.
I knew that because the sun was just coming over.
Try this one, Francine. Need to think about this, but you can get it.
My daughter lived in a dorm right across the street from the Watergate.
Oh, is that right?
From Stonehenge?
No, that
Howard
Johnson's
some, like, goth university or something?
Dormhenge.
It's hard for Francine to let things go.
Yeah. Well, because they have a whole exhibit there about the Watergate stakeout, which took place in this Howard Johnson's hotel. Yeah. It's now a George Washington University dorm. But we digress.
But we digress. Let's move on, shall
okay,
we?
Let's.
Francine, what might I find, and I will give you a lot of help with this, what might I find at 109 Court Street, Boston, Mass? 109 Court Street. And I will give you a hint here. As the building was torn down in the 1920s, this site was moved and recreated in what is now the Verizon Building in Boston.
It's Thomas Edison's workshop.
No. Not Edison. Is it
Ben Franklin? Go with Ben Franklin.
Graham Bell.
Alexander Graham Bell is right. That's right. It is Alexander Graham Bell where he invented the telephone and, you know, told Mr. Watson to...
It's around the corner from my office.
Try this one, Garland. What, who or what might reside at 147 Bonnie Meadow Road, New Rochelle, New York?
Oh.
We think we know this.
We do. I'm a channel. You're the channel.
Well, we're guessing. We think this is. Does this appear in a major work of American literature of the late 20th century?
No.
Oh, it doesn't. I thought it was The House in Ragtime.
Oh, that's
which
a great
was in New Rochelle.
Oh, how about Dick Van Dyke? No.
Oh, well, that's it. It's where Dick and Mary Tyler were.
Dick Van Dyke lived there. That's exactly right.
You go, girl.
From the classic Dick Van Dyke show, actually Rob Petrie lived there. That's really true. And finally, Barry, once again, Barry always gets the hardest questions. I'll give you a lot of help on this because I just love this. What might you have found in room 902, the Amsterdam Hilton Hotel, every day between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m., March 25th to March 31st, 1969?
The what body might, of...
Yes.
The Amsterdam Hilton Hotel where?
Yep. At the Amsterdam. Room 902, the Amsterdam Hilton Hotel, every day between 9 and 9, March 25th to March 31st, 1969.
We know.
You know this?
Yep.
Wow.
Room 902, the Amsterdam Hilton Hotel.
They're having a day on the other side. It's just one
in
of those
Amsterdam.
Days. Yes.
Right? In 1969.
Yep.
That was the conference to end the Vietnam War?
It was not. Well, it was a... It was not the conference to end the Vietnam War, but it certainly had a lot to do with ending war.
Was it...
No, was it John and Yoko having a love in...
That's exactly what it was.
Oh, yes. Very good.
Very good. That's exactly what that was. It was John and Yoko's bed-in for peace... In the Amsterdam Hotel. That was a great way to end. You got a great total, but it wasn't enough on a day when Carolyn's team was going to score 93 points. Winners this week, congratulations. Good job. And that is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to all the folks here, and especially Leela Hilton. Leela, thank you so much for making this all possible. Thanks. Thanks also to Jeff Hansen, Dave Beck, and all our friends at KUOW-FM. Sharon Salkind are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. Zach Moore is the associate producer and webmaster. We close tonight with the periodic reminder that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Port Townsend, for showing up. See you next week.
Says you coming to our town. Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Busted.
You've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
On the next Fresh Air, see Peter Wagner, a leading apostle in the new Apostolic Reformation.
Its missions include dominion, taking leadership positions in government, education, business, and the media, and evangelizing cities by conducting spiritual warfare against demons. Several apostles affiliated with the movement helped organize or spoke at Rick Perry's prayer rally. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Sunny skies today here in Nashville with a high in the mid-60s. Tonight, clear skies and the low in the upper 30s. And for tomorrow, patchy frost in the morning before 8 a.m., then sunny skies with a high in the mid-70s. Right now, it's 54.